life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. Brian Smith and not Anthony Askew here on episode 86 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. It is March the 30th, 2013, and joining me today is Bradley C. Meek.
Hello, y'all.
Hello. Yeah, Anthony is somewhere recovering from a house party. He may appear at some point during the episode. I think he did tell me that if he's about, he will drop in at as we record. So he may show up on this episode, or he may not show up on this episode and show up on next episode, or he may not show up on either of them.
It is pertinent to all these details that we are recording on St. Patrick's Day, and I am enjoying a nice whiskey and coffee, so, and in celebration.
And I'm drinking bottled water, as always. So we are going to do our spring preview this episode, where we shall talk about what we watched and didn't watch from the winter preview, and then run through the upcoming anime shows that we have some interest in and may get around to watching at some point in the future. Oh, hang on, Bradley's turned into he sounds like he's inside a mine.
Oh no.
Yeah, your signal's gone just almost completely disappeared. You've gone extremely...
I'm on a wired line.
You've gone extremely fuzzy. Maybe if I can get rid of my video, that might help.
Okay.
In case it's me. No idea how you un-video this. Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Check call quality guide. It's telling me my connection's slow, so it could be me.
I'm not hearing anything different from you on your end.
You're a bit clearer again now.
Okay.
Okie doke. Righty ho. I shall do some sort of editing at that point. So the spring preview. But first of all, we are going to run through some of our regular features, even though Anthony's not here. So he could be in for some bad news tomorrow when we get to the weekly retro recap. First up is our UK anime releases for the coming week. And we have two releases, which were actually on the last episode we recorded with you, Bradley. They never came out.
I had a strong sense of deja vu when I read the list today.
Yeah, there is the Fullmetal Alchemist Conqueror of Shambhala and Fullmetal Alchemist Movie Collection are apparently coming out on April the 1st.
For real? For real this time?
Well, maybe not. It's April Fool's Day. It could be another trick Revelation Films are playing on us. I'm actually possibly more inclined to buy them now, because now Manga Video are going to do the entire Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood on Blu-ray over here in the summer. So I probably won't buy them immediately, because there's some things in upcoming weeks that I need to spend the money on instead. I just remembered I've got a pre-order on the release of the Kintaro manga, which comes out, I think, end of the week we're recording. And, of course, Tiger and Bunny in April. But, yes, but I think I can see myself getting them after I've got the Brotherhood series.
Now, does the movie collection include both the Sacred Star of Milos and Conqueror of Shambhala?
It does, yes.
Okay. How was Sacred Star? Because I never saw that.
I've not seen it yet either.
Oh, okay.
No, because it was Brotherhood, and I've not watched anything of Brotherhood beyond the very first episode.
Oh my goodness, you haven't?
This was one where I decided I was going to hold off until I bought it.
Okay, and, like, set aside a week from your schedule and disconnect from the internet and shut off your phone, and because it's going to be what you want to do. You were lambasting people who marathon things on Twitter earlier, but Brotherhood is a show where you're going to marathon it just because it is so compulsively watchable. It's pretty fantastic, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say about it in the coming months when you finally do get around to watching it.
Yeah, I think it's due to hit about June or July.
Okay, all right.
Frankly. Then we've got Slipping a Week, Oblivion Island, Haruka, and The Magic Mirror, which we covered last week. Do you have anything to add on the topic of Oblivion Island?
I haven't heard last week's episode, but this is a decent family movie. Fairly derivative of Spirited Away, but it has like a really interesting animation setup where the people, the characters, are animated in CG, but the environment and the background and the vehicles and a lot of the monsters and so on, the stuff that's normally animated in CG, is animated digitally in 2D. And I don't think the mix quite works. The CG is especially weak visually, I think, or at least what I remember. But I think it has like a decent enough story that the whole thing kind of carries. And it's something that I could definitely see some people loving, especially if you love Ghibli movies and have like an endless appetite for Ghibli likes, because it is a bit of a Ghibli like. But the visual design is very interesting. And that was probably what left the strongest impression with me. And I quite dug that. Definitely rent it, at least. It's a rental, if not a buy it.
Well, that's definitely more than we brought to the topic last week. Though last week we did have Anthony manage to change his opinion on it within the completion of a single sentence. He went from, oh, I don't want to watch that at all, to, oh, I've got to go and see that. Pretty remarkable 180 there. And the final thing is Persona 4 the Animation Part 2. Something I have next to no knowledge. I see people tweeting about Persona related things. Mm-hmm. But I think when Part 1 came up, I just feel that I just do not have the time to invest in anything. Any sort of role-playing game like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the having an anime spin-off of it is unlikely to entice me.
I am mildly enticed at the idea of watching the Persona 4 anime, because I understand that the characters in the video game were very memorable, and I like their character designs, but the chances that I'll actually watch this are really slim, so no opinion.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was hugely reduced, I don't think I'd bother picking it up. Right, that's your UK anime releases for this week. There is no What You Watch on this episode. We're going to talk about the winter shows anyway, so that would just consume even more time. So, on to the weekly retro recap. Tomorrow's Nadja episode 5. And the show slows down a little. We spend the day at the Harcourt Mansion. Nadja and Anna, who is the little old lady fortune teller, deliver the hat she's made to Lady Queensbury. While Anna stays to make some adjustments, I think, to some fascinators that she'd previously brought Lady Queensbury, Nadja heads back to the troop but gets lost in the big house. While she's walking around, everyone assumes that, as they don't know who she is and she's dressed in poor people's clothing, she must be a servant. which is sort of a repeated, it almost starts as a joke, but then it actually seems to be some sort of comment on nobility. And of course, the irony is that we, the viewer, know that she actually is nobility.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to a maid, she learns that the man who saved her in episode 1 is known as Lord White Rose, as his nickname, and that he does so many good deeds that he probably won't remember Nadja when he meets her. At night, Nadja sneaks back into the mansion with the dress that her mother had sent her and hides in the garden watching the ball. Francis Harcourt, the Lord White Rose, retires to the garden to escape the pressure to dance with the various suitors who are attending. There he contemplates dancing with his mother as a child, which I have to say, I'm a stupid person, and that threw me the way it was filmed, that it was a flashback. I thought, oh, there's somebody else out dancing out there with a child. Not that the pad was actually the flashback. And then he spies someone in the gardens, obviously, which is Nadja, who's hiding there. She's now got into the dress that she brought with her. The pair have a conversation about each of their mothers while hiding behind pillars that conveniently hides their identities from one another. And that conversation convinces Francis to ask her to dance. Face to face, she's surprised that the person she was speaking to was the man who saved her. Francis, however, just like the maid had said, has no idea who Nadja is. They dance at the ball, and then just as it dawns on Nadja that he has no idea who she is, it pan cuts to the troop on a ferry leaving Dover for France in search of George's treasure. There's a little earlier scene, which I didn't mention, which I did quite like, is where the troop are sitting on the mechanical automobile at night when she sneaks away, and George is just twitching with anticipation to go and look for this treasure. On the boat, Nadja ponders why Francis doesn't recognise her, but then decides that she's going to look forward to what excitement the journey holds next, and that she's sure she'll meet her star-eyed knight again. Now, Bradley, you watch this, so I've got someone to talk to about it.
Yes, I decided to be sure to check out tomorrow's Nadja after y'all said such very nice things about it on the podcast.
And you've not heard the previous episode, so you don't know, you didn't hear me saying bad things about it last episode.
Oh, shoot. I think I heard all the nice things you said about episode 1 through 3, perhaps.
Yeah,
so yeah, I'm a couple episodes behind on your podcast. I have quite enjoyed the show so far. And I think that the show has gotten better now that it has slowed down. I really like Nadja as a character, and I like particularly in this episode how quickly she can recover from any kind of a mental blow to her. In this case, it's Lord Harcourt not really remembering who she is and what good he has done for her, so her shining white knight doesn't have any special place for her, it seems. I think, I had another thought and then I lost it. Please edit that out.
Well, I don't know about that. That's work, and I'm going on holiday for a week, so I've got as little editing as possible on this episode and the next, because I still need to do episode 85, and that's got a lot of editing in it. Okay. I thought the animation improved greatly as well this episode. This was like back to episode 1 standards, and particularly like the visual storytelling of sort of how they dance and where they're dancing outside and how it moves into the ball. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that cut away to the following morning, I thought works really well as well. And I like the Francis and Nadja relationship a lot better than I liked the Christian Nadja relationship in the previous episode. In the previous episode, I feel Bradley's benefit, and for anyone who didn't hear the previous episode, I found the character of Christian and the way he's instantly smitten with this 13-year-old girl, and he's quite clearly at least 17, I'd say, a little creepy. And I don't know whether that's because I think he's voiced by a man and Francis is voiced by a woman, so that might have something to do with it.
It didn't strike me as creepy because it's a children's cartoon clearly meant for children. And in that case, then I don't mind when older boys are smitten for younger girls in girls' cartoons, because that's an old shoujo trope that has been around for a long time and I think is just true to what girls want when they're very young, if that makes any sense. There's not there's no predatorial context here. I just find that to be just a very sweet young fantasy. That said, I do think Christian wasn't a very interesting character.
No,
he's definitely the weakest episode so far was episode 4. Yeah.
Yeah, and he also, there was just little bits of his character I didn't like. It was like, oh, finally a girl who's going to listen to my boring Egyptology
talk. Oh my goodness, I noticed that. And how he seemed to mistake, just because this girl is listening to me must mean that she's into me, which geeks do all the time. And it's very, very bad.
Yeah, because I was thinking about this over the week, and whereas I think the Nadja Francis, there's no romance there yet on Francis's side towards Nadja. There is from Nadja towards Francis. It feels more like how they handle the sort of teenage crushes on Adventure Time than the previous episode, because the crush was all coming from the older character in the previous episode, whereas Nadja really just didn't seem to have any romantic interest in him at all. Just had interest in the Egyptology that he was talking about. Mm-hmm. But we shall see how it all pans out. I suspect it will continue to be Bishonen of the Week. for a while.
I'd like to...
Given how many Bishonen are in the opening sequence.
I think y'all should try to move on to another show by now, though, just because 2003 was a really strong year for anime. I actually have 2003 assigned as my golden anniversary project. And the more I dig into it, the more that there's just a lot of really good stuff there, some of which is just stuff that has held up very well. But there's also like some really weird and interesting cartoons, especially once you get to the pervy late night stuff that airs. There was some bonker shit going down. I really think that y'all should try to move on to something else. In fact, I'll even give you one that I think you should try. If I can remember the name. Hang on, I'll need a second. Because, what was it? It has a terrible name.
I don't have my list here. I'll not tell you whether it's anything on here. Of course, you don't get a vote, though, so we may be on
the rest
of
the year. I don't, but I do want to try to encourage... yummy! God, I can't remember the name, and it's... Toboshi... It's one of those where even when you translate the name in English, it isn't very memorable. But it's a late night cartoon that has lots of strong Yuri subtext and naked girls. And the story surrounding it is completely batshit. It's about a girl who is in love with this girl who she happens to live with. And I think she treats her as a younger sister. So there's also that subtext there. And then this younger sister character, after this long, excruciating, like 10-minute sequence where this girl is clearly longing to ton-fuck the other girl and just can't bring herself to do it, about 10 minutes in, suddenly her younger sister, adopted younger sister, is snatched away. And then this strange creature shows up shortly afterwards and is like, oh, I missed her. Well, it turns out she's actually like a goddess of some sort who keeps visiting worlds willy-nilly and manipulating people's hearts in each of those worlds and then moving on immediately when it's convenient to her. And that kind of pisses off girl number one. So the entire series is basically her hunting that younger sister character with the help of another kind of goddess who clearly wants to ton-fuck her. Everybody in this cartoon wants to ton-fuck somebody else. And they do this by way of a giant library where you can open a book and jump into this world that the girl that they're looking for may or may not have visited. It is complicated, it is weird, it is really fucked up, it is strange, and it's kind of a nice example of how pervert cartoons can actually be interesting, and how they're really not anymore because they keep doing the same thing over and 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 over again. So I recommend giving that like one episode, just to experience something that I wouldn't say it's good, but it is really weird. Yomito.
But you can't remember the title of it.
I can't remember the title. I was busy talking instead of searching.
That would be a tricky part in me watching this.
I know,
this.
Right? there it is. All right. So I'll have to put it in the chat because I can't possibly pronounce it, but I'll give it a shot. Yami Toboshi Tohan Na Tabibito.
Oh.
It translates to Traveler Hat, Yami. Traveler Yami Hat and Book.
Yeah, I've seen that. We're not watching
You've
that.
You've seen that. You're not watching that?
It's boring. It's so boring.
Boring. I was entranced with how fucked up it all was, so...
No, I went to a con and a friend stood and told me about it for a long time. Not as long as you just told me, but... a long time. And so I watched the first episode and I was like, oh, no, this isn't any good at all.
All right.
But yeah, yes, you're right. It is a very Yuri show. But yeah, horrible character designs and Yeah.
Oh, awful.
Just horrible. Yeah, we're not watching that. I've got something from the creator of Cyber City Oedo to spring on Anthony at some point.
Ooh.
Because that will be a twist. He'll think it's one thing and it'll turn out to be another. He'll go, oh, Cyber City Oedo, excellent.
Can you tell me what that is in the chat?
Well, he's not going to listen to this episode, so...
Oh, okay.
I'm sure he's not, based on previous... No, Wandaba Style is created by the same guy who created...
Really?
Cyber City Oedo, yeah.
That's one of those, like, bargain basement anime that I always see, you know, on sale, but then never buy because it looks generic.
It's moe comedy... space travel. It's about this child genius who tries to send a pop group into space each episode.
That sounds like a smart idea.
Yeah, I think I've seen a couple of episodes way back when. But
All right.
But yes, I was, from the guy who created Cyber City Oedo, whose name I can't remember, but he never gets mentioned because I don't think he did much more than come up with the idea of Cyber City Oedo, and then everyone else developed it. I suspect it was similar with Wandaba Style. You may have just gone, hey, let's do a show about putting idols into space. I'll put my name on the credits. Yes, that's tomorrow's Nadia, and as Anthony's not here to veto this, we're going to watch episode 6, possibly next episode, if I edit it in time. Otherwise, it'll be in 2 weeks' time.
Right.
Letting light in upon magic here.
Sorry to talk more about a show that you're not going to watch than the show you were watching. But tomorrow's Nadia, in summation, good show. Check it out. Not a lot of people have seen it. Not enough people have seen it. It's easily available fan-subbed.
But I think it's partly because it's a weird show because it was in the slot that the Magical Girl shows were in between Doremi and Pretty Cure.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell it was in that slot because there's bits of the show which look glaringly different from the rest of the show, that they're obviously the toys they've got to sell.
Mm-hmm. And like, there's the magical girl aspect with her wand that she uses to dance, and then she transforms out of one costume into another.
Yeah. And I've seen pictures of dolls on Tumblr. It's well tumbled. It's the sort of show which gets people tumbling. Even if it's probably just a few people doing far too much tumbling of...
It does have some very dedicated fans. I know some of them on Twitter.
But yeah, it's an odd fit for the slot it was in, and I think it's the last one. I did look at her. I can't remember her name now. The producer who does a lot of these shows. She did all the Doremi ones, and there's a character named after her in it. Planning... Hiromi Seki. Yeah, I think she did do some other of the Pretty Cure ones, even though her name's not down on Anime News Network.
Okay.
But yeah, she'd done a long run of stuff up to that point in that slot. Okie dokie, on to the main event. Let's talk about the winter shows that we watched and didn't watch. Let's alternate. I think you can go first, Bradley, as you are the guest.
All right, then let's both talk about Doki Doki Pretty Cure, because I know you're watching this and enjoying this as well. I think last time I was on the show, I named Smile Pretty Cure to be my favorite show of 2012. I kind of regret doing that now, because the ending was a bit blah. Smile Pretty Cure, when it's on point, was best when it was a comedy, but the show is it has a very technical approach to magical girl shows, where it follows the tropes pretty faithfully and the characters aren't really developed, they're just kind of broad, and that really, really works for its comedy, which I think was some of the best of last year. When it tries to get serious, and it does because magical girl shows eventually have to or something, it's not very interesting. Doki Doki Pretty Cure, then, is interesting to contrast with it, because while I wouldn't say it's subversive, it is a very knowing take on the Pretty Cure formula, and I enjoy how it's been tweaking it so far.
Yeah, having not watched much Pretty Cure, just bits here and there, what struck me, and the thing I've been doing, is I've been watching it along with Kamen Rider Wizard, and I can never remember where all the vowels go in the new Sentai show, Kyo Ryuga. There we go. which just started, because they all air in a slot along with, I can't remember what the other one is, which I'm not watching. It's one of the collectible toy type games. And you can see, when you watch them all together, you begin to see how each of them influences the other. I mean, straight away in Doki Doki, when what's her name? Mana, the main one, is given the device to turn into a pretty cure. She's basically doing a Kamen Rider stance to try and transform. And also the way that Cure Sword is sort of like the almost like a secondary rider type character, slightly darker than the main Pretty Cure. And though that's resolved pretty damn quick compared to what I've seen so far of Kamen Riders, in terms of they introduce her straight away for a start, whereas most of the time from the Kamen Rider shows I've been watching, the secondary riders introduced around about episode 18. And then there'll be some sort of slight rivalry between him and the main rider, and then differences will be settled, and they'll team up to beat up the bad guys. Whereas this does it pretty much right at the start, and they're friends by... Is it episode 6? Last week's episode?
It was, but it did kind of end on a nice cliffhanger, too.
It did, yes.
And we're still yet to see where this baby that is in the in-between cutscenes comes from.
Yeah, because that reminded me of shows like UFO Baby and Mama is a Fourth Grader, ones where by some sort of bizarre science fiction means a teenage girl has to become a parent. So I'm expecting that's going to be a twist later on as well.
I think, yes, Pretty Cure 5 also had that baby trope in it as well.
Gotcha. And it also has the one of the mascots turns into a human being, which I know they've done before, but from going back, that they don't necessarily seem to turn into an adult human being.
No, they turn into pretty teenage boys.
Yes. Whereas instead, this one turns into a character who looks a lot like the British comedian Sue Perkins. When I first saw her,
I have no idea who that is.
look her up, and then you'll go, oh, yes, I can see why Brian thought that. But I was like, why have they got a character who looks like Sue Perkins in this? Even though it was quite clear. I mean, they kind of made it a mystery, but it was fairly obvious if you've got half a brain cell to figure out who it was. They leave enough clues. But yeah, the ending of the last episode that I watched had a great twist ending. He was like, oh, wasn't expecting them to do that in the sixth episode.
Yeah, they normally there's kind of the build-up in villains, and I like that the villain, or at least the guy who seems to be the boss of the other two villains, seems to actually have two brain cells to rub together, which is novel for a Pretty Cure series. They're normally very purposefully, very entertainingly stupid.
Well, again, that's a lot like Sentai villains. At least the ones at the start of the series.
Well, I feel like Pretty Cure is basically a Sentai show that
happens
to be animated and made for girls. So,
I also like that they appear to be, the three villains we have at the start all appear to be like a teenage girl's worst nightmare. So it's the little bratty brother, the older sister, and the creepy uncle.
I didn't pick up on that. That's good. One final thing before we move on. I love that Mana is a competent heroine. You would not catch her dead running out of the house late to school with toast in her mouth. She is on point at all times.
Yeah, they are kind of all of them at the moment are sort of, they seem to be either aspirational or there's like some sort of dream job for teenage girls. It's like you'd either want to be like them, or you'd like to have in a fantasy, you'd like to be like, oh, there's the rich one, there's the one who's an idol,
right?
Which I think it kind of goes back. I mean, the first Pretty Cure, the two girls in that are kind of like that. You've got the really smart one and the really athletic one. They're not Usagi from Sailor Moon. they're not the permanent C grade student who's a klutz and a crybaby.
They're definitely not, but I feel like in the original Pretty Cure, Homuro and the other one, I can never remember her name. they were kind of aspirational, but they were also like, let's take all the things girls could possibly be and divide them into two characters so you can either relate to one or the other.
That's true, yeah.
And that was actually kind of my favorite aspect of that, because they did some really interesting interplay between these different character types. For instance, one character, one of their friends, becomes really depressed because her boyfriend, who is secretly one of the villains, rejects her. And the way that each character tries to help her through it reflects their character type. For instance, the smart girl tries to talk her through it, but that isn't working. So the more athletic girl, who is more of an action girl, says, let's just go get crepes. And that works like a charm. It's a little character detail. The characters were really thought out in that one, and that's just a good example of how that was. True.
Right, moving on to something from my list. Okay, I don't think this is on your list. Cuticle Detective Inaba. I know a lot of people were down on the first episode, and I would say that suffers from it is too much of an introduction, which a lot of comedy shows, I think, particularly when they divide up into two stories per episode, suffer from. Because they tend to try and do all the introduction in the very first half of the episode, and they've got a load of characters to get over to the viewer. But then I think it's very strong from there on out, as long as you don't mind joke after joke about various fetishes. And there's, I mean, once you get to the second episode, you get the opening credits, and you think, oh, there's going to be some sort of darkness coming to this. Because you see, like, this wolf-type ghost emerge from this tiny, tiny, tiny sheep in the opening credits. But then, no, he's just a goofball as well. The sinister villain is also a goofball. And there's terrorists, they're goofballs. There's mafioso, they're goofballs. And they've all got some sort of weird fetish or problem. And but then around the mid-season, it does deliver a two-part episode where it does address the darkness that seems to be lurking at the edges. And I was really impressed because it actually is about something, and something actually real. And it's about the reliance on confessions in Japanese police investigations, which I have to say,
really?
Coming in, is something I would have not expected from this show.
Oh, just confessions, like, in general are not very reliable, but interesting.
Yeah, so the villain was basically framed for murdering his partner because his partner stood up against other people in the police department who were sort of creating false confessions, or forcing people to make false confessions by planting evidence and the like. And so he wants to bring down the Japanese police department because of that. Which is a problem because some of the other good guys you've been introduced all the way through are also police detectives. The main character used to be a police dog. Because there's all the werewolf characters were bred to be police dogs in this show. Which is the first sort of hint of darkness that they've all been artificially inseminated from. Well, this particular werewolf who's trying to bring down the police and a few other ones as well. But yeah, I've dropped behind a couple of weeks because I've been busy. But it's the show I've tended to watch every week.
Okay.
But bear in mind, I've been watching it very first thing on Saturday morning, so I was half asleep while I've watched every episode. So.
Oh no! I mean, you're making it sound. I watched the first episode. It didn't look terribly interesting. I might be willing to give it another shot now, but of course there's too many good cartoons to watch at the moment.
Yeah, that is the thing. I mean, a lot of these things on my list, some of them I stopped and will learn why, and some of them I may have only watched a few episodes, but I do intend to watch more. Mm-hmm. It's just finding the time to do it. Right, back over to you, Bradley.
All right. Let's talk about another thing that I know we're both watching. It's actually a continuation from the winter season. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure has gotten awesome in the second half.
Right. I will say, don't say too much because I've stopped at, I think, the episode where Lisa's introduced, because I'm holding off because we're going to do a full Battle Tendency episode at a later date with the Secret of the Sailor Madness.
It is probably my favorite thing that's airing right now. That's all I'll say. I'll leave it at that. Back over to you.
Okie dokie. Right. Now, let's go through the things I've been rounding up at the end this weekend for this podcast. One thing that I mentioned on the previous episode, and as far as I'd known, hadn't been fan-subbed and definitely hadn't been licensed. But then, lo and behold, when I looked yesterday, there were two episodes of it fan-subbed, and that is Beast Saga, the spin-off of Transformers about humanoid animals with dice in their chests. And I will say, it's not very good.
Darn it. I remember your description of it at the preview podcast for the season that we're talking about, and it sounded good.
I mean, it's really dumb. But the thing is, it's 12 minutes long, each episode.
Oh.
Which I was not expecting. So actually, it's not so bad that it's not watchable. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's short means it's actually quite watchable. But it's pretty stupid. And I have to say, I thought there was going to be some sort of... that it was going to be accidentally xenophobic. Because it really feels start of it. It's going to be mammals good, every other type of animal bad. Because right at the start, it's just these frogmen led by a alligator man who apparently have come into the city and are causing trouble. I thought, oh dear. Is it some sort of horrible metaphor going to appear here? But then they pull back a bit because they introduce this character who's not one of these battle beasts. No, they're not called that, but that's basically what they are, if you're familiar with those old toys. With a shoeshine boy who is a clownfish, and he's got a complete with a little newsy hat. And he's like the adorable little boy who gets in trouble in these first two episodes that the hero lion has to save. I mean, the storylines are... you could easily slot them into an episode of the old Thundercats or Bucky O'Hare in the Toad Wars. Mm. It is your standard fighting funny animals. I don't know whether they're going to be any more going to be fan-subbed. They've not said they've dropped it, but they are going very slowly. And I have to say, it's not very good, but I can see myself continuing to watch it.
Oh my goodness.
There's two characters I just want to see, who I've seen the toys of. There's one which is a hamster, and I would totally buy that toy if I saw that. And also there's a turtle with a little general's cap on.
I saw the link to the hamster one, and that is a pretty sweet toy, but just buy the toy, man. Just buy the toy. Don't suffer through it.
I think like I said, it's bad. It's identifiably bad, but it's not insufferably bad. Mm. And the fact that it's short means it's watchable. But it's not very well animated. And it's pretty much every one of these types of shows you've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Though it's been a while since I've seen Bucky O'Hare and the Toad Wars, so it may well be better than that. I suspect Bucky O'Hare and the Toad Wars animation has not aged well. As a lot of those 90s cartoons haven't. Right, back over to you.
You want to burn through all the shorts real quick?
Yeah, far ahead. I think I've got one you haven't, and I think you've got some I haven't.
Okay. Encouragement of Climb, I'm up to date on that. I quite like it. It's probably my favorite short that's airing right now. It's not going to be for everyone's taste because it is moe as fuck, but it does have like a lot of really nice details about mountain climbing. It's pretty well animated, and I just find the characters charming even though they're basically moe stereotypes.
Yeah, I watched the first episodes, and the fact that it was moe as fuck stopped me from watching anymore. But you're right about everything else. It is well animated, it is educational, but yeah.
The other thing I've been enjoying is also moe as fuck. It is Man Girl, which is not about a girl who is a man or a man who is a girl. It is actually about the process of publishing manga, which is a really fascinating aspect that... I've never seen before. So when the show is about that, it's pretty fun to watch. When it's about moe girls doing moe shit, it's not as interesting because the moe shit isn't fresh.
Yeah, I thought the first two episodes were really good, and then I watched the third episode, and I was like, oh, they forgot to put any jokes in this episode, so I'm not going to watch any more of it.
It's generic enough that I don't mind it so much when it does that, and of course, it's 3 minutes long, so perfectly digestible.
Okay, well, I should pick a short off your list and my list, and that is Inferno Cop. Which is the greatest, purest anime of 2012, because it started on Christmas Day.
It feels like the first draft of a much better short. That they just threw whatever was on their mind at the moment. It is so, let's grab things off the top shelf,
think about it, slap it down. Are you up to date with it?
Okay, no, I'm not. I only saw three episodes.
Okay, right. The writing is, they're not just pulling stuff, because things actually pay off later on.
They do? Okay.
Yeah. Even though, literally, they just use the same characters, no animation whatsoever, and they'll just reuse a character model they've used for a different character later on. But no, things loop around. Episode 11 is a pretty mean-spirited parody of End of Evangelion, but more mean-spirited about people who go on about how deep and meaningful Evangelion is.
Ooh.
And I'm not sure whether the character who's doing that is a parody of someone in particular or a general type.
Mm.
And then that's the first part of a two-part episode. And then the second part, bizarrely, becomes a parody of Marvel's House of M event.
The fuck? Okay. All right.
There's loads of Marvel influences. If you've been reading any of Jason Aaron or Rick Remender's Marvel work in the past decade.
You know, I don't read comics. I just tend to have a small number of hobbies that I dedicate as much time to as I can, and comics is always on the edge of being one of those hobbies. Yeah.
I will say, if you haven't seen Inferno Cop and you like Jason Aaron and Rick Remender's weirder stuff that they do for Marvel, you'll probably like Inferno Cop, because it's sort of tapping into the same sort of bizarre leaps in logic that go on in their comics. And yeah, and it just gets more ridiculous. They start putting in, they've been doing merchandise, and they put adverts inside the cartoons itself. I think it's great. I think the fact that there is no animation actually makes some of the jokes work better. They're more focused on the mechanics of the joke than the actual animation. But yeah, I could also understand why people would go, ugh. This is horrible. I don't want to watch this. Why is there no animation? Why is that skeleton cop puking for almost an entire minute?
You know, it's not even that. It felt so lazy. And it wasn't the animation that gave me that impression. It was the jokes that it was such a turnoff. But your description of what happens in future episodes, I mean, each episode is what, 3 minutes? I can catch up. So I'll probably try and do that maybe later this afternoon.
Have I got another one on your list or not?
You do. Senyu.
Oh, yes. Now, Senyu. I enjoy this, and our following episode is a show which this reminded me of.
Oh, same here. I also enjoyed it. Good job saving the anime, Yamakon. You finally did it. It's not totally obvious with its Japanese RPG trope jokes, unlike every other joke about Japanese RPGs. It finds novel enough angles that it keeps me laughing. So
yeah, I have to say the joke in the opening episode about being a descendant of this ancient hero was so good. I was annoyed that I'd not thought of it for any of the role-playing games I've run in the past 20 years. It's such a good joke about that trope. But I have to say, as it progresses, particularly the opening sequences, you begin to think it's being made for an audience of one person, and that is Yamakan himself.
Particularly the joke the joke that he's not there that episode, so the opening goes to shit. And then there's a cut to the office where they're animating the show, asking, where the fuck is Yamakan?
Yeah, and some of the references in those opening bits, you're like... Mm-hmm. Will people who are reading this comic and assume watching the cartoon even get some of these references, like the ex-bomber shows up as one of the heroes? Yeah, but I mean, it works for me because I'm that age, so.
Yeah.
Spot on, man. And I've not really liked anything he's done before, so.
You know, I've kind of given Yamakan a hard time since the disaster that was Fractal. But I'm glad to see that he's working in anime again. I actually find him one of the most relatable directors working right now, because he is so honest about his mixed feelings about the anime industry right now, and he won't shut up about it. that makes him appealing to me, even though I don't think he's an especially skilled director, and his ambition outreaches his grasp. But he's done, I thought, a really good job on both Sinew and Crazy Shrine Maidens. I thought was a really good adaptation. I look forward to seeing more of his stuff. That's it. I'm glad he didn't quit like he said he would if Fractal was a disaster.
Well, lots of people say those sort of things. It's like... Okay,
I've got a couple more, and I'll burn through them real quick. Puchimas, which is kind of a chibi parody of Idolmaster. Chibi parodies are nothing new of large franchises. Gundam does it all the time. I guess what's kind of a bit novel about this one is that the chibis coexist in the same world as the straight Idolmaster characters themselves, and there's actually some interesting riffs on the different on the characters and how they react to these chibis who suddenly disrupt their livelihood by being weird. It's a fun watch. It's clever at times. It's definitely something where you have to know the Idolmaster franchise or at least have seen the Idolmaster anime to probably fully enjoy, but I'm enjoying it. The problem that I've had and why I'm not up to date with it is that Hulu shows a full 3 minutes of advertisements for a show that lasts a minute and a half of content. There's another 30 seconds of a closing theme. It's ridiculous. It's tempted me to go back to fan subs for this. I don't know. And finally, My Sister Is an Osaka Mama isn't particularly good, but it is kind of a fascinating look into what Japan considers to be rural and what stereotypes come with that.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure I even got through the first episode of it, so I didn't even put it on my list. Again, I think it might have been the aesthetics rather than any gags, which...
You know, like, there's some pretty... raunchy look at my little sister, isn't she so provocative kind of jokes in the beginning, and about four episodes into it they kind of drop it. So
I got a couple more. One was Ishida and Asakura, which was terrible.
So I
watched
heard.
One episode of it and it felt like the first minutes of a longer episode that they just cut off at the end of the running time they'd got. So I don't know whether maybe if you watch them all together it works better, but no, I wasn't going to. And the thing which I only just caught, and I don't think I even was aware of its existence when we did the winter preview, is Line Offline Salary Man.
I hadn't heard of this until you mentioned it just now, so what's this about?
It is apparently, well, plot summary from Anime News Network. The daily difficulties of Moon, a salary man that works at the production design department of Line Corporation. I think the gimmick is supposed to be that all the characters kind of look a bit like various smileys, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's Dilbert.
Okay. Actually doesn't appeal to me.
It's very Dilbert-like. It appeals, but without the Scott Adams madness.
Okay.
In that it's got human characters mixed in with anthropomorphic characters. It takes place in an office.
That never bothered me. It was just the smugness of Dilbert that I found insufferable.
Yeah, I don't think... from what I've watched so far, I don't think it's got into, like, I know how people should behave in offices type smugness. It's more... It seems more low-level. So the first episode is Moon wondering why everyone's staring at him. And he's going, oh my God, I do have a nose hair sticking out. And so he's panicking. He's trying to find ways to check his nose to see whether he's got a nose hair sticking out. So he goes and speaks to his best friend, Brown, who's a bear, and gets him to inspect his nose. And then it turns out at the end of the episode that everyone's staring at him because he hasn't got a nose hair sticking out. Normally he does have nose hair sticking out his nose.
Oh my God. Okay, that works. That works. Yeah. Sounds like a good comedy of manners, then.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's by the sheer quantity of episodes which have been fan-subbed that it is airing daily. Here we go. So voice chat apps mascots. There you go. That's what they are. They're the mascots of a voice chat application. So presumably they are smileys, which you can put into this app, or maybe avatars. But there you go. I found it quite amusing. I should probably check some more out because I think they're about 3 minutes long.
Okay,
what have I got on my list which isn't a short? And I have much more. Bakumatsu Gijiden Roman. Yeah, Roman.
Roman, I watched this too.
I'm only about a third of the way through it, but I am enjoying it. It's just finding the time to watch it. And I think after the first episode, it definitely sort of breaks away from, oh, it's just Lupin set in the 19th century.
It definitely does. I'm up to date on it. And I enjoyed it up to about a third of the episodes. And then after that, it gets kind of generic pretty quickly.
Okay, so maybe I haven't gone past the point you didn't like.
I mean, I think my high point was when I realized that this was basically a Super Sentai show with Catwoman as one of the villains. and I thought, wow, I'm really digging this. And that high point was as good as it got, which was like 5 episodes into it or something. So,
but hey, it does have a monkey punch character who's a samurai with a gun, and it's well animated this time. So.
Oh my goodness, yes, that sequence with his guns was great. So there's like some really high points in the middle, but the actual story, especially once Roman realizes something about his past, I won't spoil it for you. But he will go into a period of angst that is excruciating to watch and kind of breaks the tone of the show in a really unpleasant way and goes into some really stereotypical anime bullshit.
Well, I'll just pass on with that to the heroics.
You'll have a couple episodes to skip then if you want to go straight to heroics.
But yeah, I should probably carry on with that, I think. And then you've got a bunch of... Oh, you got loads of stuff I'm not watching. Is there any new? Go on, talk about Vivi Red Operation.
Right. I really thought I wasn't going to watch Vivi Red Operation. I am not that strong. I like magical girls too much to skip it, it seems. To be completely honest, yes, it is as creepy as you would think from the ad. Well, it is and it isn't. So there is the Butts fan service, but there's never quite the Predator storyline that there is in other anime that has that kind of lolicon aspect to it. And I think that that's generally what bothers me the most when they write kind of the lolicon fan service into the story. The butts in and of themselves are just, you can take them, you can leave them. I left them because the show itself is kind of magical girls on Nitro. And that's fun to watch. Like, there's one attack that they have, which is a giant hammer that is the size of a fighter aircraft that they bash into giant weird aliens. The actual fights are a lot of fun. There's some other aspects of it that are fun, like the crazy scientist grandpa becomes a stuffed weasel by accidentally transferring his soul to it while he's experimenting with something when he's trying to create the Vivi Dread. It's just a solid show, very trope-filled, but well-animated enough and well-paced enough that I find myself consistently entertained throughout. It's probably my pick for surprise of the season. I didn't expect it to be this good, but a couple episodes into it, I found that I was really digging it. It's a fun watch.
Oh, okie dokie. And you've also got Psycho Pass.
So Psycho Pass ended up being pretty good in the end. It's not quite done yet, but it's almost done. I wish we didn't have those, 8 episodes of setup at the beginning, because the second half of the show has really picked up the pace, has kind of gotten to the point that it kind of meandered its way to, and it has really picked up in quality since then. There's a couple things I'll note about the show that it does particularly well. It chooses an unusual point of view for its future dystopia. Normally, dystopias are written kind of also as morality plays, where each of the characters also fit like some kind of type, and it's a current political commentary, not so much about a possible future, but it's about our present. You know, like 1984 was George Orwell's warning about some of the worst aspects of communism and so on, in a statist dystopic future. Psycho Pass doesn't have any clear political motivation under it that I can tell. And interestingly enough, it's told from the point of view of the people who are trying to enforce the status quo. And it's honestly ambiguous about how the status quo actually kind of works for a lot of people. It just happens to have this horrible truth about it. So there's one character in particular who has benefited from this dystopic future, who it suggests is going to have to make some pretty profound choices about whether she's comfortable with how her government runs things in future episodes. Also, it just gets much better. There's much better conflict in the later episodes. There's a really well-paced and exciting-to-watch episode, which was episode 16. That was a thrill to watch, one of my favorite moments of this season. If you were on the fence about it before, do check it out. If it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would interest you, don't. I think in the end it will only turn out to be kind of an okay show that happened to have a pretty good ending. Can I skip straight to Robotics Notes?
Real quick?
All right. So Robotics Notes is the other Noe Tamina show, and it was one of my favorites going into this season. I think the quality has dropped off precipitously now that it's trying to wrap up its storylines, and it doesn't have this enjoyable weirdness that it once did. I'm not particularly happy with how it has wrapped up some of the character storylines. I'm going to finish it. I enjoy it enough that I'll definitely finish it, but it's kind of gone downhill.
What else is new? Tamako Market.
Tamako Market is really, really, really good. One of my favorites this season. Probably my favorite new show this season. It's the new Kyoto animation show. It's one of the nice things that they did is that they took the show largely out of school. So it's instead in a strip mall, and the characters in the strip mall are great. They're fun to watch. The characters themselves are pretty fun. And they also added a little bit of Yurusei Yatsura in it, because there is a bird character who is from this other weird place where birds can talk. And they have their own culture there. So there's these cultural misunderstandings that kind of reminded me of Yurusei Yatsura. The whole stew just kind of really works together, and it's one of the things I look forward to most each week. I think it's Kyoto Animation's best show in a long, long time, and I know you're not normally interested in this kind of thing, Brian, but do give the first episode a shot.
I can tell you, I caught a bit of it in the January Sakuga Mad that appeared today,
mm-hmm.
and now I've pinpointed what I don't like about Kyoto Animation's animation. Because it is very good animation. I don't like their hands.
Really?
They're tiny little girl hands they tend to draw.
You know, I was actually about to mention, the hands are one of my favorite aspects, not because of how they're drawn, well, not so much because of how they look, but how each character is going to move differently. They pay that kind of attention to detail. And this is even for the fairly minor characters who run the different shops. How each character moves in their hands and how they walk is all, like, different from each other.
Yeah, it's just they seem, they seem out of proportion with the rest of the character designs. And they tend to draw, they seem to have a thing about them all not showing any sort of wrist, just sort of the hand just emerging from the sleeve of a shirt. Anyway, he was annoying me, and that pinpointed me. I'm the guy who didn't watch, what was it, Night Rage, because I didn't like the way they drew hats.
And so, yet you watch One Piece, and they always botch Luffy's hat. Always.
But they botch a lot of other things as well. So it's not as glaringly obvious. It's like the
type. I don't know, the hat bothers me in One Piece. Anyway.
But also, I'm only watching that as an extension of the comic, so the comic is the thing I like. The mm-hmm. cartoon is just an extension of it. So I don't watch it every week because of that reason. And also, the other reason at the moment is because I just see people on Twitter bemoaning how bad the cartoon's got in terms of animation.
Oh.
But yeah, anyway.
Anyway.
Kyoto Animation wrists. Thumbs down on those. Well, wrists and hands.
It seems like such a petty thing to dismiss it over, but all right.
I'm looking at screenshots now on the Google
what
image.
What can I do?
Some of them have got tiny, tiny, tiny wee hands. They're like Vic Reeves and Bob Morton, the character. They've got like tiny little doll's hands coming out their sleeves.
All right. I see that you have one more thing that you haven't mentioned. Do you want to talk about that, and then I'll try and wrap up my side real quick? Good Job Club. You watched the first episode of Good Job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Good Job Club. Terrible.
Okay. I haven't seen any of it.
It's so boring.
I understand that like the characters are really, really popular this season when you ask otaku who are their favorite characters. I think I saw a poll on Crunchyroll about that. So.
Righty-ho. Yes, Good Job Club. No good. Bad job. Good job.
Now, are you keeping up with Polar Bear Cafe still?
I have not. I don't know how far I've drifted behind. Again, that I've been watching Cuticle Detective Inaba instead of it. Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been very good, I think, this season. It is not very funny right now. But a couple episodes, I think the last two episodes have kind of picked up the pace a bit. I think it has tried to be very emotional in some episodes, and that hasn't really worked. It's also been repeating a lot of the same jokes over and over again, like how Polar Bear keeps calling Grizzly Bear while he's in hibernation, and Grizzly Bear gets angry and says, "Why do you keep calling me?" You know how it is. I'm going to finish this darn thing, probably. I think this season is when it ends, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I'm sure they've run out of manga material already, so...
That's my sense of it.
It's a bit like how... the first 52 episodes of Sergeant Frog are great because that's all the manga material. And then the following 52 episodes are pretty bad. And then they hop back into the manga material and it gets good again. So maybe it just needs to take a break and it might come back stronger once there's some more stuff they can adapt.
Sounds about right.
I'll tell you where I am on that. I'm on the episode where they're trying to get a present for Sasako. Is that her name? Such a long time since I watched it. Mm-hmm. And she has no interests whatsoever.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah, that was a ways ago.
But yeah, it's a way back. But that was a good episode. Because it was just a ridiculous concept. Because she's also kind of the surrogate character for the reader, I presume.
I always thought Sasako was the surrogate character.
Yes, that's what I was saying.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the guy who has a crush on her.
No. No, he's trying to get a present for her, and
right.
They keep on asking her what her interests are, and they cannot come up with any interests. So you just buy a pebble for her in the end. She puts a pebble in a box, because she has no interest in anything. Rightio, so what you've got left? You've got AKB
0048 Season 2. I think it actually finished up this week, so I'm behind just a wee bit. This has actually been difficult for me to watch since that scandal broke out several weeks ago. So it's hard for me to look at the to be involved in the drama about an idol group when that same idol group abused one of its own members so grossly in real life, of course. And I can understand why people still like the show. It's had some fairly involving drama recently, but it's all been about idol politics. It's not been so much about fighting, doing guerrilla concerts to fight the entertainment ban and so on. Absolutely ludicrous. The first season was pretty fun. I'll try and finish the darn thing. It's just getting harder for me personally.
And Hunter x Hunter, I think that's the last one. And Good Fairies.
Good Fairies. I'll just say Hunter x Hunter has been really good, and they've done a better job of adapting the Greed Island arc than the older version of Hunter x Hunter has. And I expect by the end of this season, we'll start moving into the Chimera Ant arc, which is brand new material for any anime. I'm really looking forward to seeing that because I have never read the manga. This is all new to me. Good Go Fairies, I'm surprised you're not watching this, Brian, because it seems like something that would be up your alley.
Yeah, you're right. I've watched the first episode of the first series, and mm-hmm. Yeah, I was of the same opinion. I was like, this should be up my alley, but it's not. I think it's just the way they tell the jokes doesn't sync with my sense of humor, even though the jokes themselves would be with my sense of humor.
I think part of the reason I like this show is because it's kind of making up for how most anime is basically character comedy, if it is a comedy, Good a Good of Fairies doesn't really have a lot of character comedy, but it has a lot of every other kind of comedy, including what I think is improv. I'm pretty sure there's some moments where they just sit the actresses down and say, here's a funny picture, say something funny about it. And those scenes can either work very well or just be wince-worthy. You never really know what Goody Good of Fairies is going to throw at you. And sometimes there's jokes that they set up in one episode that don't pay off until like three episodes later. I quite like it. It has this nice experimental feel to it. It's a fun watch. Like, give it another shot. Give it a couple more episodes. See if it latches onto you. Because I know it took me a couple tries before it made sense to me.
Uh-huh. I'm not giving Milky Homes any more tries, I'll tell you that.
All right.
But let's move on to what new shows we want to watch. Oh, you've got a much bigger list than last time I looked. It was three titles last time I looked.
I added a lot because I forgot to do research, and so I did a lot of research this morning. So,
Well, I should kick things off this time, and I'm going to go with the one which I was going to take the most amount of time for reasons which will become clear, and that is Train Heroes.
That is an odd choice to start with.
There's a lot to talk about. There's more to talk about with Train Heroes than anything else coming out this season.
All right, I'm intrigued.
Right, okay, so this was announced way back in January 2011 that TV Tokyo, Kowloon Animation from China, and Pat Lee, he of Dreamwave fame and then Dreamwave infamy. You don't follow comics, so...
No.
No, there was stuff involved not paying people who were working on Dreamwave, and I'm sure some other comics... You look it all up.
Sounds like he's an asshole.
Well, he's very controversial, I think. Okay. Let's put it that way. Yeah, they announced they were working on Train Heroes for the Chinese market, and then it'll be aired in the Japanese market as well. And I'm going to guess may well be aired internationally. Because it looks like that sort of show. Now, also in July of 2011, various places, but in English you can read the report on the Shanghaiist website, reported on Shenyang Animation, not Kowloon, who was in the earlier story, had a cartoon called Bullet Train Boy. And it was a rip-off of Tomy's Hikarian anime from 1996, and I think again in the 2000s. And they had loads of video evidence about basically how they were using almost storyboards from Hikarian to animate this other show. And Hikarian is a Tomy line of toys with trains which transform into robots. And that aired on TV Tokyo, which are apparently the people who were going to animate this one in the story from January 2011. Now, when Anime News Network reported it, they tied those two stories together. It's basically saying that the one which was being reported as a ripoff was also the one which was reported as being made back in January. Now, when you look at... So Train Heroes has slipped on and off schedules, I think, for the past year. I think pretty much every preview it's appeared on the sheets of. I now have images this time and a date when it's going to come out. And it does not... It too looks a lot like Hikarian. But the production value is way higher than the ones which were illustrated as a ripoff. And also, Tomy are under the copyright list of this new Train Heroes show. So
I'm getting a headache trying to adjust
and
all
this. It has a slightly different Chinese title than the one which was being accused of being the ripoff.
God. Okay.
But so I'm sure there must be something more to the story that I'm missing. But I could not find anything last night. I spent an hour doing research last night on this, up to past midnight, trying to figure out what on earth was going on with this story. So anyway, we have coming out a CG show where trains turn into robots. The trains look a bit like the trains out of Chuggington, which I think also is a Tomy property, which does air in the UK. I'm sure may well air in America as well. And it It's got a pretty high production value for a CG. It looks like what you'd expect a kid's CG cartoon about transforming trains should look like. Whereas the one which was accused as a ripoff looks like what you'd imagine a Chinese ripoff of an anime to look like, if you were being all stereotypical. So yeah, I'm not sure what's going on behind that, but I, because of all this bizarre story behind it, and sort of misinformation or possibly correct information which has turned into misinformation, I'm curious to see what this show's like. I suspect it will be terrible or perfectly acceptable for kids and nothing I'd enjoy, but I am very curious as to how this story all ends, because it's just been so long. I mean, is that it's over 2 years, and that seems a long time for a turnaround for an anime show. But maybe not a CG show. Right. One for you,
Sounds
Bradley.
Like it will make a great topic for a panel one day at a convention.
I'm sure it will, yes.
So I have much more straightforward reasons for wanting to watch Hayate no Gotoku QTs, even though I'm embarrassed to say that name. God damn it, Manglobe. Please name your new Hayate no Gotoku anime something I can feel okay about saying out loud. Oh, anyway,
Now, this Cuties. Is the Combat Butler show, isn't it?
It's a what?
It's the Combat Butler thing.
Yes, Hayate the Combat Butler, which I have so far seen every anime of, and there's nothing to stop me to keep going because I have enjoyed nearly every one of them. Fans of the earlier Hayate anime typically don't like that what Manglobe has done so far with the franchise, but I think they've been solid, reasonably entertaining. I don't expect Cuties to be any different. Cuties is going to be a lot more episodic, though, than the last series. That kind of worries me because I think one of the strengths of the last series was that it had a story that actually had some consequences for some of the characters, even the long-established ones. In this case, they're all episodic episodes that center usually on one of the girls in the quasi-harem that surrounds Hayate. So it sounds like it'll be primarily a comedy, less of a drama. I don't know. I'm still looking forward to it, so.
Okay, Dave, talking of returns, the thing I'm most excited about, outside of Train Heroes, is the return of Azazel-san.
Yes!
Which I think has been the best fit for Mizushima's direction since Halley and Goo. Or possibly the last episode of Blood Sea, depending on whether or not you've heard of the phrase Grand Guignol. I'm sure I've mispronounced it, but I've heard of the phrase. It's like, oh, yeah, still hung up on people not getting what's going on in that episode. the show in general, in terms of the sheer amount of blood. It's like, this is a genre which has existed for centuries.
And we're probably going to have to talk more about it in the next episode, because I'll talk a little bit about Blood Sea then.
Okie dokie. And it seems pretty much the same basic stuff as all the previous outings, either as the TV series or the OEVs they've put out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm super excited for that. I'm assuming it's still 10-minute episodes. I've not actually seen whether that's the case or not.
I haven't checked either. I'm also looking forward to it. I enjoyed the TV series when I watched it, so.
I wonder whether they're still going to avoid all the racist strips from the comic, though. Because they notably...
Sorry, what?
There's a few strips in the comic which are noticeable by their absence in adaptation on the TV show. I don't know whether they've done them for their AVs, but...
Well, Mizushima seems to be a director who is very, very good about taking away some of the worst aspects of anime. For instance, Girls in Panzer. He actively fought his animators to make sure there were no panties shots in the show. So yeah. I'm pretty sure he'll also have a problem with racism.
Yeah. And I'm expecting some interesting stuff from because I think there's the Koala guy to show up and the rival organization. So I think those will be the things to show up in this series. Touchwood. Right, over to you, Bradley.
Alright, so what I'm most hyped for in the coming weeks is the ending of Girls in Panzer, whose production was kind of delayed for a really long time, and we're finally just now getting to it. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed Girls in Panzer, but it does such a good job at being kind of a straightforward sports anime, but with tanks and that makes it a lot of fun. Those are going to air, I think there's actually a new episode coming up this week, this Thursday. And then the week after that, the final episode will air on TV. And then Crunchyroll will air both episodes at the same time. So by the time you're hearing this podcast, I will probably have enjoyed those last two episodes. But I've been slavering at the mouth to finally see this for a long time.
Right. Okay. Let me see what's next on my list. Where's my notes gone? There we go. Right. Here we go. I'm going to pick Attack on Titan. Now, I noticed that people seem to have cooled a bit on the comic. I think for the first few volumes, people seemed really hyped, but I'm noticing that seems to have cooled off a bit. And the director is Tetsuro Araki, who I don't think has turned into a particularly great director. He's the guy who did Death Note and then did High School of the Dead. I think there's a few things in between there, but...
He strikes me as a director who's very good if he has the right material.
Yeah. And also there are two chief animation directors, one of whom worked on Guilty Crown, where they also had multiple chief animation directors, and they split the episodes odd and even.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing for this. But the one good thing I will say that makes me look forward to it is... Yasuko Kobayashi is writing, and she wrote, Kamen Rider O's, Kamen Rider Deno, and currently she's in charge of the scripts for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
That's very promising. I didn't quite look at the staff, but I do know that this is on my list because both I find the concept interesting and promising and fun, and that the manga was very critically acclaimed.
Yeah, and it's got a good trailer as well.
Obviously. It does. Trailer is very hype-worthy.
Yeah, so that got me excited to see that. Right, over to you, Bradley.
Right. So Glass Mask is kind of considered a bit of a classic in shoujo manga. And it also, it had a really good adaptation several years back, which you might be able to still watch on Crunchyroll. It's about 51 episodes of fantastic melodrama. Which takes the difficulty of making it as an actress and elevates it to some pretty stupendous heights. It is apparently still revered in Japan and is well-liked enough that it's one of several parody series we're getting this season of popular franchises. In this parody series, they take these fairly prim and proper girls and make them juvenile delinquents.
And the of the correct period as well, they seem to be as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, I had was completely aware of this, and now looking at the character designs, I'm totally up for watching this as well. Okay, as you brought one of these up, I shall bring the one I'm looking forward to the most of these parody series, and that is DD Fist of the North Star, which has Akitaro Daiichi directing it. So...
Oh, now I'm looking forward to it. I didn't know that he was directing it. See, I've never seen any Fist of the North Star. I need to fix that eventually, but it's on the... We'll get to this sometime.
Yeah, and it's got Akira Kamiya. He's not doing Kenshiro. He's doing the guy who was before Kenshiro, whose name escapes me at the moment. But he's in it, and he's been in loads of Daiichi's recent stuff. Puyo Puyo, and he also was in the, what was it called, that live action one-off they did in the new year with a bunch of the Puyo Puyo actors in, where it was set in a maid cafe in the 19th century. I can't remember the name of it now. It's had a terrible pun in this. I think it was Emedo Cafe or something.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's fan-subbed it or even ripped it at all. I've even watched it. But it had the female lead from Puyo Puyo in disguise as a man for some reason in the trailers, and Akira Kamiya playing an old man because that is what he is nowadays. Yes, I'm really looking forward to that. And the trailers are promising. in the various characters living in the modern day. It's basically, the premise, that...
Premise,
I know. the premise that it's the characters from Fist of the North Star in a Tokyo which didn't have an apocalypse happen to it. I believe is the high concept of the comic that it's based on.
All right. I'm looking forward to this now, mostly because I like Daichi, and I think he's a fantastic comedy director.
Yeah. Okay, over to you.
All right. Let's talk about something else that is on both of our lists. Valvrave. I don't really know a lot about this. I know it's the new Sunrise Mecha show. I looked over the staff. The staff seemed okay. What do you think?
This is one of the shows I convinced I was... I poured water on my enthusiasm as I was writing the notes for this episode.
It is something like, okay, look, it's basically Gundam Redux is what we've seen of the plot so far. And there's no particular standouts in the staff, either in the writing or the directing.
Yeah, the directors, the guy did Rosen Maiden and Kurin Ai, which shows I don't like, so...
Mm-hmm.
And the writers, the Code Geass writer and Azumanga writer.
Okay, so the Code Geass writer actually gives me a little bit of hope because that makes me think maybe it'll be batshit crazy.
But... I wrote that I did like the look of the robot.
Yes, the robot does look nice.
Right, I'll pick something which I also poured water on my enthusiasm, and that is Gargantia.
All right, so was it because... Urobuchi is involved.
Yes,
that's what I figured.
I just went off the trailer to begin with. I thought, oh, the trailer looks nice. But then again, in the trailer, no one's talking. So I'm not having to deal with his writing.
Oh my god. Well, dialogue in anime is just bad. Almost always, you know? So it never bothered me. I just... Anyway, keep going.
No, that's it. So the trailer has me enthusiastic, and I shall probably, again, well, I haven't said that. I said that about Psycho Pass, and I didn't watch the first episode of that. So In theory, I'll watch the first episode of this, because the production level looks nice, and the design looks interesting. And it looks like a science fiction on a much bigger scale than, say, Psycho Pass was.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it as well, in part because of Urobuchi, and I think he continues to do a good job writing fresh material for anime. So this is definitely one of those I'm going to be watching as soon as it's out.
Okay, right. Over to you.
Right. I didn't think I wanted to watch Oremo 2, which is also known as My Little Sister Can't Possibly Be This Cute 2. The original show turned out to be much better than I thought, because it would have these moments of perceptiveness about some of the worst aspects of otaku, but how otaku can still be, at the core, decent people. The characters are basically people who will all have these obsessions, with the exception of the main insert-kun character. Well, he's almost insert-kun. It can go either way. But they're all struggling to be basically good people, and there will be moments when it can be really perceptive and others where it's kind of stereotypical and keeps resetting back to the status quo. I didn't think I wanted to watch this until Colony Drop wrote up a really good post about it and reminded me of some of the better aspects of the show. And also reminded me that the first season had an amazing opening theme that is a deadly earworm. So, I'm going to watch it. I'm kind of looking forward to it again. It is different enough from every other show about otaku that I think it's worth at least checking out the first few episodes of the first season.
Well, that's not going to happen. But
not for you. I wasn't saying for you. I know that you would not.
No, because I know how I like my style of otaku shows, and that is in the style of the Eltingville Club strips from Evan Dorkin.
it's a better update of Genshiken than I would have given it credit for. So,
well, okay, so you know, I'm pretty sure it must be a better update of Genshiken than Genshiken 2 was.
I liked Genshiken 2.
Well, the series is horrible.
Really,
it's so badly directed.
That could be true, but.
I just found it unwatchable.
I think the strength of the source material kind of shone through there.
It's the Queensblade guy, and he just can't direct for toffee.
That's true.
But I will give them studio arms. They do have a theme they like to put in their shows, and that is giant breasts.
I think in Oremo, the theme is actually ass, but keep going.
Well, no, I don't think Studio Arms did that. They did Queen's Blade and Genshin too. And various other things. What's the one with the demon recently? The social political thing about the demon and the hero getting together?
Oh, Moyo, that was so bad. I didn't talk about... See, in the summation we just had earlier, I only talked about the shows that I liked. There were plenty of disasters this season.
That's
Moyo being one of them.
That is another Studio Arms one. And they've definitely got a type. Okay, I shall pick the other goofy parody of old manga that was on my list, and that is Tetsujin 28 Go Gal. And beyond the title and the character design, and the fact that apparently it will focus more on the day-to-day life of your boy and his robot than actually fighting robots, nothing else seems to be around about this show. But its existence is enough to make me go and watch it.
Basically the same here. I'm not entirely encouraged at the idea of slice-of-life robots, but it could be fun if it was a particularly clever riff.
Yeah, and the character designs look particularly idiosyncratic, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right, back over to you.
Right, so tell me how many stereotypical anime plots you hear in this summation that I'm about to give you for this next show, called Dansai Bunri no Crime Edge. So there's a guy. Our hero has a particular fetish. His fetish is for hair. And he loves cutting people. He loves cutting people's hair, though. So he is the best hair cutter in his high school. But there is one girl whose hair he cannot cut, and that is because she has a curse. But he has magical scissors, and the magical scissors let him cut her hair. But in the process of cutting her hair, he ends up being thrown into a survival game that somehow has to do with this ancestral curse. I count like 3, maybe 4 in that summation.
Yes.
So it sounds fairly derivative, but it sounds like a combination of derivative elements that if it's executed properly, and this is directed by the Doraemon veteran who's done a couple of other good things, it could be pretty good. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's by the Doraemon guy.
It's by the guy who did your Yami Toboshi Tohon no Tabito.
It is. Yes. Okay, this is not the guy I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of a different cartoon. I'm doing this without looking at Anime News Network.
They did Fate Stay Night TV.
Oh, okay, I remember. Okay, this could go either way.
Unlimited Blade Works movie.
This could really go either way. I suppose it's going to depend on the strength.
Yeah, from your synopsis, I was interested, and then I looked at the character designs, and my interest fell off a cliff.
Those are pretty stereotypical character designs, but I could see it being good, so I'm definitely looking forward to giving this a shot.
Righty-ho, what's next? Okey-doke, I'm going to go with Jewel Pet Happiness. Keeping in with my attempts to watch the big mainstream shows as they appear, as I did with Doki Doki, I'm going to try and watch Jewel Pet Happiness. I suspect this may prove harder than watching Doki Doki because Jewel Pet does not seem to have caught the hearts of licensors or fan subbers in the same way that other magical girl shows have.
Now, Jewel Pet, I think you described a couple seasons ago, was kind of a crazy mixture of Sentai. Okay, and high school comedies.
So the one which is currently running is a Sentai parody, at least it is at the start. The one before that is a high school parody. And this one, looking for the synopsis, seems to be going back to what Jewel Pet Sunshine was doing, where it's going to be set in a school where humans and Jewel Pets go to school together and in a magical world to learn how to use magic. So I shall see whether that's as hilarious as the last two series have been. And hopefully the last one, Kira Deko seems to have been fan subbed pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a good chance that this may well carry on if the fan subbers enjoy it. But I think it's entirely dependent on that because there's only one group fan subbing Jewel Pet as opposed to the Pretty Cure where multiple people having a go at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's my first of my big mainstream shows. There's another one which will be coming up later.
All right. I have a surprising choice for my next anime that I plan to watch. Photocano, which is based on a PSP game, I think, about taking pictures of pretty girls or something. It's a dating game, I think. The reason I'm interested in watching it is because it is going to be the first show directed by Akitoshi Yokoyama, who is a very, very promising animator. Has done some really great stuff in Danao Koyal, Kaiba, Dead Man Wonderland. I think he might be a protege of, what's his name? The guy who directed Kick Heart and Tatami.
Yuasa.
Yuasa. I think he might be a protege of Yuasa, looking over his resume. So I expect that Photocano will be very, very, very well animated and might be worth watching just for that.
I look at the character designs.
Character designs don't seem like much.
They're very leggy. It does seem to be a leg thing going on there. At least on the promo picture on the Anime News Network. Righty-ho. Okay, my other big mainstream show that launches at some point during this season is... As I find my list again. Danball Senki Wars, the third Danball Senki series.
Alright.
I have barely scratched the surface with the previous two series.
Me too.
Because I've come in late. So I'm hoping that if I hop on board with this one, I should be able to grasp what's going on. I mean, I grasped what's going on when I hopped in on the second one. I didn't really need to know much about what happened previously because there was a lot of new characters introduced who had to have it explained to them anyway. And it seems to be new characters again for this one, so hopefully I'll be able to jump straight in and have lots of tiny little robot mecha action.
I might do the same this time. I've only watched like a couple episodes of the original Danball Senki, but those were quite fun, so...
Yeah, I think it does interesting things with scale, and also, obviously, if you're a little kid, it's a lot easier to relate to people who are building the exact same models as you're buying from the shops. And they stay the same scale, rather than having to imagine yourself inside a Gundam in a show you don't want to watch in the first place.
There's also a nice way of tying in playing video games to it.
Yeah.
The way that they're controlling the robots. Instead of riding the robots and being in the robots, they kind of do control them like a video game, but without a controller, I think they just shout things at them, if I remember correctly. So.
Yeah, I can't remember. But yeah, in the second series, one of the new characters is a guy who's really good at the Street Fighter of their world, which is like a Street Fighter version using the little robots. And the other thing, I really like it because in the UK, when I was growing up, and before I was growing up, and before I was born, there was a comic strip called General Jumbo, which was about a kid who had an army of tiny little robot soldiers. Which was homaged in Alan Moore's top 10 comic with the character Toy Box. And so that reminded me, this reminds me of that. And you've got these kid heroes who have these tiny little machinery of destruction. Particularly in the second series when they're just running. I don't know, I've not seen enough of the first series, I don't know if this happens, but in the opening of the second series, it's basically like terrorism being carried out by these tiny little robots. As they run wild through a shopping centre. Right, back to you, Bradley.
Okay. Hang on a minute. I'm trying to figure out which of these Japanese names is the one I wanted to talk about next. I wrote this one down wrong. That's why I couldn't find it. Okay, so what I want to talk about next is... Goodness, do we have an English name for this? All right, I'm going to go with the English name because I can't pronounce the Japanese one, which is Miss Moromi of the Beach. Anime trailers tend to blow and not really give you a lot of information. Just give like short bits of animation that don't really tell you a lot. Even trailers that are translated into English, they just very rarely look appealing. This one has a good trailer. Good animation. It's a comedy about a boy who catches a mermaid, and so it's kind of a love comedy for boys who like tits. and looks pretty good. Not as in quality, but as in just how the animation moves. I'm going to give this an episode. It could be horrible. It could be decent. I don't really expect it to be great, though. But I did like the trailer, so...
Yeah, I just had a quick look at it. And it's got an interesting style to it.
It does, yeah. It
looks like they're really trying to keep the designs from the comic.
There is kind of this nice deformity to the character designs that I think translated pretty well in the animation that I saw.
Oh, and apparently there's a Yeti in it later, so... Spoiler alerts.
You ruined the whole thing for me. Damn it.
But yeah, it looks like they have various other monsters show up. So who's doing it? Tatsuya Yoshihara. Do I know him from anything? It looks like mainly Key Animation. So yeah. I was just curious whether it was another Squid Girl person, but it's not. Because I think if you come back in a few years, we'll look at Squid Girl as being a starting point for a lot of comedy people.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've only got one left.
Oh my, okay.
And that's got a big maybe against it. And that is Majestic Prince. The reason it's on my list is because I thought the character designs looked different. You know what I'm
saying? Is that the Otome game adaptation?
It's a mecha thing, but it may well be as well. Majestic Prince anime. Oh, it's a manga.
It's a manga. Okay. Well, there is one, like, super Otome game adaptation that's coming out next season.
It's a mecha anime based on a manga, and it is... The character designs, I was like, oh, and I looked up who did it, and I thought, okay, well, I can... kind of see in that they've all kind of got the same face, but it's not the same face I'm familiar with the guy using, and it is Hisashi Hirai, the guy who did Gundam Seed, which was infamous for being accused of all the characters having the same face.
Okay.
It doesn't look like that art, and it's got some very different looking characters. I'll just send you the link to the main page, and you can see the character designs on there. It looks kind of goofy. The characters are all very simply designed, and then the mecha is super complicated.
I gave this a pass, in all honesty, because of its name. It sounded like something I wouldn't be interested in. I don't know.
No, I don't know. I put a maybe against it as well, because I'm not sure anyone working on it has particularly done anything. It
just doesn't look particularly appealing.
No, I was the same, but at the same time, there was an appeal to the fact that it didn't look... It didn't really look like anything else either.
That's true. Except it looks like Gundam Seed. That's not a point for it.
In costume, yeah, more than face. Because I think he's definitely got away from his identikit face, even though they seem to have new identikit faces, the four main characters. But yeah, I was seeing what else they've done. A lot of stuff which I was meh about. Which is, say, why I put a maybe on it in the first place. It's Riko Yoshida who writing it, but then again, she writes nearly everything, which isn't written by the few other people who write everything else. Your K-On, everything from Digimon to K-On to your Man Girl, Polar Bears Cafe. Yeah, you name it. She's written for it. Right, that's my list, so it's all down to you now, Bradley.
All right, I'm actually going to cut a bit off of my list in the interest of time, because we're closing in on 2 hours, at least 20 minutes of which was spent describing this 2003 pervert cartoon that you're not remotely interested in watching. Instead, let's talk about, for the last two on my list, Danchi Tomu is a slice-of-life comedy about an elementary school boy. So there's a new subject for slice-of-life for you. It's apparently based on a manga that's published in a seinen magazine. And it's directed by the director I was thinking of earlier, the guy who has worked on a lot of Doraemon stuff.
Oh, and Space Brothers.
And Space Brothers. Yeah. And Mysterious Girlfriend X.
That is the odd one out. Certainly once you add this, it becomes even more odd.
Well, actually, I don't know. I think the common thread between all of those that I'm detecting is a strong sense of sentimentality, even for your girlfriend's spit. So I'm expecting a super sentimental slice of life cartoon. And I guess the novelty of the story of a young boy is enough to get me interested in at least checking out the first episode. And I think the director has done a decent job with everything he's worked on so far. So
is it really a novelty?
A novelty of...
To have a young boy in this? I mean... One of the biggest cartoons in Japan is about a young boy.
Okay. Point taken. Point taken. I mean, the slice of life aspect, I think, is what gets me.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I suppose you could... Well, I might be stretching it to call Crayon Shin-chan slice of life. It's slice of eight.
Yeah, it's much more straightforward comedy.
Yeah.
They say slice of life, but as we all know, that term is abused in so many different ways. It could turn out to be just another straightforward comedy. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's a meaningless term, and I'm getting echo again. Right, we're almost near the end. I shall bear with it.
Okay,
carry on.
All right. So my final thing that I'm going to mention is Anime Mirai is going to air in the coming weeks, and that is a project where young animators in different studios, using money that is given to the studios by the government, basically make a 30-minute short on whatever they want. There are two I'm looking forward to in particular. Imashi's new studio, Trigger, is doing Little Witch Academia. The previews I've seen for that are fantastic. Oh, the animation looks great. The character design looks great. And Death Billards, which is a Madhouse short that's called Death Billards. I'm going to watch the fuck out of that. there's a couple more. Ryo and Aruvu Rezaru. I'm not entirely sure what either of those are about. But...
No, I looked at the trailers for all three, and yeah, I'm the same with you. Little Witch Academia and Death Billards are the sort of stuff I'm interested in, and the other two are standard anime. So how are these airing? Because I half read something about it. I know they got a theatrical showing a few weeks ago, didn't they?
I think so. And they're also going to air on TV Tokyo in the near future. And I think they're going to all air at once. And then they're released on DVD.
Okie doke.
So it's technically a TV anime.
Yes.
Very technically.
But yeah, I'm like I said, I'm looking forward to those two. And not so much about the Gonzo and the Zects.
Gonzo's making TV anime again. Holy shit.
Well, 30 minutes.
I really thought they were
30
dead.
Minutes of what?
No, they have another show this season.
Oh, do they as well? Okay.
Yeah, it's something to do with fairies protecting something. Didn't look terribly interesting, but who knows?
Okay, that's your lot. You win the game that I wrote because Anthony's not here to play it.
Fantastic.
Well done. You got a buy. You can have a go if you want without Anthony here to try and guess these years. Or we should probably move on. We've gone long
We
enough.
Should. We really should.
So, anything you want to plug?
Not particularly. My blog is thosedamncartoons.wordpress.com. It's not particularly active at the moment because I'm in school looking for internships and watching a ton of cartoons.
Okay, well, two of those are definitely more important than writing a blog.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on Twitter at awesome_engine. And you can find my website, awesome-engine.com, which I am updating. But when you hear this, I probably won't have been updated because I'm on holiday as you hear this. Yay. Getting things Yay. At my mum's loft is a working holiday, unfortunately.
God.
but yeah, if you go up, there should be some more 1990s anime talked about. The last one I... As we record, I put up was Tekkaman Blade. And as always, you can find this podcast on dynamitingthebrain.com, on facebook.com/dynamitingthebrain, and on iTunes. So why not subscribe and write us a review so that more people can find out about the future that is Dynamiting the Brain. Goodbye!
Bye!
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.